I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum.
Spider-Man.
Welcome to Spoiler Alert, episode 16 for September.
I'm Simon, and my favourite Van Damme movie is Universal Soldier, which also starred Dolph Lundgren. Yes, there may be better JCVD films out there, but I always have a special soft spot in my heart for those crazy reanimated corpses of Vietnam vets.
I'm Duncan, and my favourite Weasley character from an action film who is not a bad guy but is a hindrance to the hero is Alice from Die Hard, closely followed by Paul Reiser's Burke in Aliens.
Oh, I love Burke.
He's great.
Tell us a bit about what you've been watching.
Just in the tail end of the film festival from last month, I saw the highly moving Bully. It's a documentary about the tragic effects of bullying in America, and I cannot recommend it highly enough. It will have you close to tears, especially the main focus of the film, who's a 12-year-old boy who only ever gets the attention of his peers when they're beating him up. The other sad parts are two sets of parents playing the adoring home movies of their children who have killed themselves due to the tormenting of school
bullies. Right, this was a big film in the States. Yeah.
I think it's one of these cases of a documentary trying to make a social change, and I think it will actually be quite positive. That kind of 12-year-old, especially that age, 12, 13-year-olds, I think they should all watch it. It should be mandatory.
Anything else this month?
I saw The Dark Knight Rises.
The Dark Knight Rises. You did, didn't you?
I did see The Dark Knight. Have you seen The Dark Knight Rises?
I have not.
Oh, well.
Some people will be tuning into the podcast right now in disgust. But yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, I finally saw it. Looked great on IMAX, but the lapses in logic of the narrative is distracting. Sidelining Batman in his own movie kind of worked in The Dark Knight because Heath Ledger's Joker was so strong, but here it was frustrating. Takes ages for Batman to show up in this film, and then he gets his ass handed to him when he does, and then he kind of shows up at the end and does some funky stuff. Look, I actually think it's the least successful of Nolan's Batman films. Joseph Gordon-Levitt is the high point for me. And it was interesting enough overall, but I'm glad they finished the franchise. It's retired for now.
I like to think when you say he shows up at the end and does some funky stuff, that he actually does the bat dance.
That would
be... like the Adam West one from the 60s?
Yeah.
That'd be awesome.
What have you been watching?
Well, a few different things. Hellraiser, which I hadn't seen since back in the day. And just as effective now as it was then, I think. A Brit horror film from 1973 called Raw Meat, which was also called Deathline. It was a very entertaining turn from Donald Pleasance, basically padding out the limited storyline. And I saw 21 Jump Street,
right,
which was a lot more fun than I expected. I never really imagined Channing Tatum to be both that charming and that funny. Right. So that was a surprise to me. But the standout for me this month was The Woman in Black, Hammer Horror's triumphant new gothic ghost story starring a grim-jawed Daniel Radcliffe. Fantastic stuff. And I'm kind of ashamed to say that about the halfway mark, because I was watching it on my own, I paused the DVD, turned on the lights, and then kept watching. So, sorry, I'm really disappointed in myself for that one. But yeah, really gave me the chills.
I wanted to mention, it's called The Sessions here in New Zealand. I think it's got other names in other countries, maybe like The Surrogate. It's directed by Australian Ben Lewin. It's a film I saw on advanced preview, and it's inspired by the true story of a polio-afflicted man who cannot move his body, wanting to experience sex for the first time. And he employs a sex surrogate, played by Helen Hunt. And
I've heard of this. Yeah
and uses her services to guide him through the journey. It's a fearless performance from Helen Hunt, full frontal nudity, naked for a lot of the film, very frank about sexuality. It's humorous and touching, and I thoroughly recommend it. It's really quite surprising how good it is.
Right, that's The Sessions.
It's called The Sessions here in Australasia, as I understand it, but I think it's gone through a whole bunch of different names in other countries.
The ice is gonna break!
What's the news, Simon?
What's the news?
What's the news?
Well, the news to me is Tom Cruise is remaking The Magnificent Seven.
Really? By himself? Just CGIing himself into all the roles?
Cruise is apparently taking the Yul Brynner role, as he would. He's one of those actors whose range is pretty limited, I find. He can be great when playing to type, but can look lost when he needs to stretch. So I'm not sure how I feel about this one and how it's going to work, but I'm pretty interested to see who else gets cast.
Well, look, twin spoiler alert obsessions collide in one new film. Shia LaBeouf is to appear in Lars von Trier's latest...
Nymphomaniac. I didn't touch this one because I figured you would. So go ahead.
Yeah, so it's called Nymphomaniac, And apparently the LaBeouf admitted to sending sex tapes of himself with his girlfriend to the Danish filmmaker to get his attention,
yeah.
Which obviously worked. I heard he did the same thing with Spielberg to get the role of Mutt Williams in Indiana Jones. Now,
I'm not sure I want to see LaBeouf's LaBeouf.
Now, if only Shia can get Von Trier to direct Transformers 4.
Yeah. That would be a much better film, I can tell you that. So, fresh from teaming with David Cronenberg, everyone's favourite cuckolded, sparkling vampire, Robert Pattinson, will be making a film with Werner Herzog.
Excellent.
A film in which he plays T. Lawrence. That's right, Lawrence of Arabia.
Wow.
So, add this to the Ocker Western he's doing with Animal Kingdom director David Michaud, and you're looking at a seriously interesting post-Twilight career. Michaud's debut film, Animal Kingdom, was an absolute knockout, by the way. So I'm kind of looking forward to seeing his next film.
Mm. No, that is good. It seems Patterson's used it really wisely, the same way that DiCaprio post-Titanic, used his sway to kind of go and go to directors. Like, he always talked about going to Scorsese and saying, I want you to lead me through my next three films, basically. Yeah. And Depp did the same thing, trod the kind of a different path.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah.
I don't know if his career is going to last or it's going to burn out post the Twilight, but that's some great directors to be working with.
Yeah. The new trailer for Man of Steel is straight out of the Dark Knight School of Preview clips.
Mm.
Have you seen it?
Yeah, I have.
Earnest, serious, and only a hint of action.
And with competing voiceovers, depending on which one you watch. Is that right?
Yeah. And Jim Carrey looks set to get busy again. Feels like we haven't heard from him in a while.
Mm.
He's appearing as a mentor called the Colonel in Kick-Ass 2.
And from the makers of the Teletubbies comes the biggest failure in box office history.
Excellent.
Yeah, that's right. The Oogie Loves, a team of tubby-like folk in suits, and their accompanying slumming humans, including Christopher Lloyd, Cary Elwes, and Chaz Palminteri, amongst others, teamed up to bring in less than $500,000 across 2,160 screens, which means each screening took in $207 on opening weekend, which is a record low. And just for the record also, Chaz plays Marvin Milkshake, Carrie is Bobbly Wobbly, and Lloyd is Lero Sombrero. There's also a vacuum cleaner called Jay Edgar, which I think is actually kind of funny.
Thanks to a friend of the podcast, Jeremy Dillon, I've been alerted to the fact that Troma have put all their films on YouTube.
Oh, so, really?
Yeah. So you can now legally share the entire Toxic Avenger series with friends. But more importantly, you can see Cannibal the Musical, which we will have to do for a Can You Dig It sometime soon, I'm sure. So do yourself a favour and watch the South Park Boys debut feature film on YouTube. Spidoikle.
Spidoikle. Yeah, look, I've got to say, that doesn't excite me at all for the most part, because the days of getting enjoyment out of watching terrible trauma films have passed me by. But Cannibal the Musical, legitimately very good film.
Yeah. Excellent. Also, quickly, spoiler alert, breaking news. A script that was leaked onto the net and subsequently derided for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles was apparently a very old, long-since rewritten version. Michael Bay put everyone's fear at rest. I know you'd be losing sleep over this, Simon. Just thought you'd like to know, so you can feel free to raise those expectations beyond the stratosphere again.
Yeah, cool. Thanks for that.
That slice is the difference between life and death for some half-dead Bangladeshi.
Yo, you're getting me all upset here.
You should get upset. Everyone should get upset. When Hitler was greasing the Jews, people were saying, don't get me upset, you're bumming me out. My duty as a human being to be pissed off.
All right, this is a regular segment we call No Comps, where Duncan and I slap down a hard-earned cabbage and pay to go and watch a film on new release. And this month, that film was The Expendables 2.
Sylvester Stallone and his cronies are forced into a mission by Bruce Willis's shadowy government agent. Now with an Asian femme fatale in their crew, the Expendables hunt down Jean-Claude Van Damme's evil gang of mercenaries who are about to wreak nuclear havoc on the world.
I'm going to start off and say I enjoyed this one. It's a little like many of the stars' careers. It starts off with a roar of adrenaline and energy, settles in for a soggy, slightly flabby midsection that seems rather too pleased with itself. Then nonetheless pulls itself together for a kind of solid, enjoyable, if hardly unforgettable, finale.
For a lot of people who will watch this, they'll want to see the big stars, the big old action stars of the 80s, and how they interact with each other. To me, the big name appearances became a little bit monotonous, kind of a series of revelation shots, really. Chuck Norris's particularly is used for nothing but comedy effect.
Mm.
The only emotion betrayed by his face is one of anxiety at trying to remember his lines.
That's always the way with Chuck Norris, man.
The predictable Chuck Norris joke is actually delivered fairly well, I thought.
Yeah.
A lot better than Arnold and Bruce swapping catchphrases that are so clunky in their delivery that it feels like you're watching a bad SNL skit. In fact, both Norris and Schwarzenegger are I kind of found them quite embarrassing. It's like wheeling out two retired athletes who haven't played a single game in 10 years and then throwing them into a World Cup. Norris has always been devoid of charm, but to see Arnie's presence and comedy timing desert him is kind of painful, I thought.
Yeah, look, that's fair enough. I mean, it wasn't fatal to, for me, that kind of quippery and self-indulgent gags about their old... It got close a couple of times and there were a couple of clunkers.
Yeah.
But I guess I was slightly more forgiving than you when it came to that.
I just kind of felt like they were the first take. You know, like both Chuck and Anna were looking at their watch going, oh, I've got to be out of here in half an hour.
Which probably was.
Yeah, exactly. That came through the screen to me. And right. That dragged me out of the film a lot. But look, it's left to Jean-Claude Van Damme to save the day. His first scene is the single non-action highlight of the movie.
Yeah.
Coolly humiliating the Expendables, setting the plot into action, and even getting to execute one of them without giving too much away.
Yeah, no, you're not giving too much away.
And I never thought I'd say this in my life, let alone on a film podcast, but I was disappointed there wasn't more Van Damme.
Oh, absolutely. There should have been more Van Damme. It would have been better if there was more Van Damme. Mm. Absolutely. Possibly better if there was more Dolph Lundgren, actually, as well.
Yeah.
Because I thought what they gave him was quite fun. But Van Damme, yeah, he's a star in this. He's fantastic. Playing a character called Villain. He's a villain called Villain. As if Stallone just hadn't changed the template in his screenwriting software. You know? Yeah, I believe Statham was originally named Professor Tagonist, by the way. And the best action scene is all up front as well,
yeah.
which is a bit of a problem. It's a big muscular battle scene involving trucks as batting rams, an acrobatic Jet Li, a ton of firepower, and several small action cues actually stolen from other recent films, unfortunately. It never gets quite as good as that, but though it's often deliriously violent, which is kind of entertaining in its own way. My favourite moment is when a poor henchman somehow manages to become the target for, I think, every single Expendables gun.
Yeah.
And just gets turned into mincemeat. Statham is still, I think, a really entertaining action star.
Yeah, I think he's lightning quick in his
super
fights.
Fast.
He is, he really stands out. He impressed with every fight scene. Something I quite liked was his relationship with Stallone. You know, like that kind of George Clooney, Brad Pitt, back and forth in Ocean's 11.
We're just comparing Statham and Stone to Clooney and Brad Pitt, by the way. But yes.
But it's the same dynamic where they're obviously the leaders of the team and they have that kind of back and forth.
Yeah.
And I actually think Statham kind of pulls the best out of Stallone in a lot of ways in those scenes.
Yeah, I genuinely believe those guys are mates.
You
know, if you're watching the film, you'll believe that Offset, these guys hang out because it feels very real in the film.
The logic of the film borders on non-existent. They managed to undertake the most inefficient rescue plan ever devised. It seems to adapt the Murphy's Law mantra to everything that can go wrong will go wrong, so let's just destroy everything and hope for the best.
Yeah.
No stealth, no cover of darkness, you know, that's for idiots. Instead, they'll just employ maximum carnage through the most weapon-laden and expensive route possible.
Which is why it's so awesome.
Yeah, exactly. But look, all of this is applying criticism to a genre, and I think specifically to a franchise that the very concept of it makes it impervious to this criticism. So I guess the question is, what can we rightfully criticise? Well, simply, for me, two things. Action and comedy one-liners. And Expendables 2 is hit and miss in both departments. The dialogue waves between quite good banter sometimes and groan-inducing one-liners. And then really it's on to the action, which is excellently captured and choreographed. Really well done. The ramp up to an R rating is gleefully embraced as men are decapitated, exploded, and in one case put through a rotating helicopter blade face first.
Fantastic.
And in a breathtaking piece of viciousness, the criminally underused Jet Li even gets to destroy a man's face with his bare hands in a blinding flurry of punches as blood flies towards the screen.
Yeah.
That was, you know, just that one shot made me feel like I was watching The Raid again, you know? You know, the way, especially the way that Jet Li's dressed, I was like, oh, it did double take.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah.
And,
you're right, Jet Li is, without giving away too much, he is underused in this film. I'd like to see more. But Statham kind of takes that mantle over in the third act. Yeah, no, you are right. I mean, some of that quippery is pretty groan-inducing. But it delivers on the action, I think. Gets around to a decent enough conclusion. And I thought a fairly muscular fight between Van Damme and Stallone's body double.
Yeah. Stallone looks scary.
Look, I actually thought Van Damme looked scary when he took his glasses off.
Yeah. Both of them in every film they appear in, the more and more they turn into a wax figure. I think by Expendables 5, you know, Stallone will just be a statue.
This is pretty geeky, straight-to-DVD kind of stuff, but Scott Adkins plays Van Damme's 2IC. Gets a nice beat down with Jason Statham. He's also in the upcoming Universal Soldier Day of Reckoning. Don't laugh. No, fair enough, love. Which also stars Van Damme and Lundgren and is directed by John Hyams, who was responsible for the unexpectedly cool Universal Soldier Regeneration. He's carrying on the series. So watch for this guy, but probably only at the DVD store.
You know, just for me, in closing, Expendables 2 is exactly what you'd expect. And pretty much nothing more. While the action is at times tasty and brutal, sometimes it's also a bit forgettable. And the comedic elements for me, you know, for the most part, just awfully handled.
Yeah, look, I'm with you some of the way on this. It justified the price of admission for me, unless somehow you walked into the theatre with your expectations set way too high for a film called Expendables 2. Then you might be disappointed, but that's your own fault, I'd say. It delivers what it says on the tin. Better's the action from the first film, I would say. And is mostly intentionally funny. And of course, some of the comedy doesn't work, but there's nice stuff in there as well.
And now we're on to the segment called DVD Resurrection.
This month, inspired by the cast of Expendables 2, we've decided to do a little something we call DVD Resurrection. Now, when we were growing up, you didn't go to the movies to watch Van Damme, Norris, or even Stallone. Instead, you hoofed it down to the video store, rented a grainy VHS copy of Kickboxer or Missing in Action, whacked it in the top loader, adjusted the tracking a little bit, and kicked back with your mates to watch JCVD dip his fists in broken glass and administer a beating to Tong Po. So in honour of that golden age of action, we set ourselves a bit of a spoiler alert homework assignment. Go to our local video store, rent an action film that never saw the insides of a cinema, and see how well it stacks up against our 20-year-old memories of watching Mark for Death and Bloodsport. So, Duncan, how'd you get on? Is the spirit of American Ninja alive and well and lurking amongst the shelves of your local video store, waiting to roundhouse kick you in the face?
What an introduction. My one is directed by your friend John Hyams.
Is this Dragon Eyes?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
Kung Lee plays a recently released convict who moves into a drug dealer infested neighborhood and is drawn into a gangland battle complete with corrupt cops. This is basically a 90-minute cut story scene from a PlayStation game. All it's missing is a little X symbol at the bottom of the screen prompting you to skip.
I always skip those scenes.
Yeah, and you wish you'd skip this. The dialogue is functionary and the character's non-existent, which is to be expected, but you will switch off from the storyline within minutes. Ex-Robocop Peter Weller is slumming it and provides a usual direct-to-DVD double whammy job of being sleazy bad guy and showing up everyone else's lack of acting ability by his mere presence.
Yeah.
It also keeps with the modern standard of Jean-Claude Van Damme appearances, in which his utter boredom with the material is written all over his face.
Yeah.
Remember in the 90s, as you were just talking about, when you couldn't get him to stop kicking people in the face?
Yeah.
In the last 5 years, he barely wants to look up at his co-stars, let alone throw a punch. I mean, I would not be surprised if he was on the shoot for literally a day. But let's face it, you and I already knew all this before we put the DVD in the play.
Oh, look, I've seen the trailer. I haven't seen the film, and the trailer is just appalling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So look, let's get to the action. Kung Lee is very quick and has an array of great moves. Garden rakes to the head, arms broken, people clotheslined so hard that they flip 360 degrees. Some of the hits were brutal and fast enough to elicit chuckles from me when I was watching it. So, you know,
thumbs up
there.
Yeah.
Yeah, thumbs up for that. But look, there are no action set pieces, no narrative context for the fights. And they are so few and far between as well, especially in the middle third, where instead we're treated to so much soul-searching and inspiring pep talks that you wonder what the hell you're watching. For a direct-to-DVD action film, it's annoying how earnest and dour it gets, that you'll be begging for mindless carnage to invade your senses. The film has a washed-over look and flashes up characters' names like they're in a Guy Ritchie film. Unfortunately, you'll forget the names within seconds, whereas the film takes minutes to forget the characters altogether. Also, there's a lack of guns in this film, which is beyond belief. We're talking about a gangland battle,
yeah,
and B, America, LA. In the final battle, a warehouse full of enemies literally wait in a line for the hero to fight them one by one. They're all just standing there, like looking real staunch.
Yeah.
Like, not even circling them, just literally standing there waiting for him. And when the guns finally do appear, it's in the worst choreographed Mexican standoff you've ever seen. I've seen 48-hour film festivals that are Mexican standoff. It's better than that. Avoid. And what about yours, Simon? What did you choose?
Right. Well, I rented Blood and Bones, in which multiple martial art black belt Michael J. White stars as ex-con Bone, who fights his way up through an illegal underground fight circuit, running afoul of petty hoods, gangsters, and crime lords, all the while pursuing his own mysterious but noble agenda. This was an easy choice for me. It had a title that screamed low-rent action, a cover quote from Ain't It Cool, calling it the best direct-to-DVD film of the year. Yeah, and it stars Michael J. White, a massive ripped hunk of beef with the grace of Van Damme and the intimidating yet chocolatey vocal tone of Barry White. If Barry White was also able to crescent kick you into next week. It also features Julian Sands, the Warlock himself. So who was I to say no? Julian Sands obviously doing the Peter Weller, the role in this film, you know. How does it compare to the VHS action flicks of our youth? Well, in storyline at least, pretty much perfectly. It's easy to imagine this straightforward revenge flick set amongst the backstreet fight scene that legions of action films have convinced me are both really common and actually quite lucrative, being filmed in the 80s or 90s. And in fact, Van Damme has already made this film. It was called Wrong Bet. Although, just to trick you into renting it more than once, it was also called AWOL and Lionheart. So you've probably seen it, probably twice.
Right.
The point of difference is that Blood and Bones flirts with being a blaxploitation flick. The core cast are all African-American actors, and while Jay White's character is essentially a blank canvas, a kind of a mysterious do-gooder who walks into, literally actually walks into the sunset at the end of the film, the villain of the piece, known simply as James, is surprisingly well-rounded. A straight-edge kingpin who describes profanity as a brutal vice, he uses it as no gentleman. He's got ambitions to step up the crime ladder, even if the next rung of the crime ladder is a hateful racist played by permanently scowling Julian Sands, which pretty much sums up all Julian Sands' performances. And as much as James wants to be part of these sort of upper echelon of villains, he also clearly despises them and their racist, elitist attitudes. And we do too. So it's not hard to find ourselves starting to root for the kind of the mid-level bad guy, which is surprisingly memorable turn of events for a straight-to-DVD action film, I thought. And I guess the main question is, how is the arse-kickery on display? Well, like the film around it, it's variable. It opens with a nice, solid, pre-credit, shirtless prison beatdown, which isn't at all homoerotic, by the way. That's shot in a pretty artless fashion, which I think is actually a good thing, because it doesn't let fancy edits and camera trickery get in the way of just watching Jay White get down to business. And his business is pretty impressive. He's monstrously muscled, agile, and fast as hell. So it's too bad most of the fights are so damn short, with White walking through opponents in kind of Steven Seagal fashion, you know, where he barely has to take a punch along the way. There's a pretty good final fight scene with a villain who hasn't had enough build-up for us to really despise. And it's fast, and it's furiously, and it's pretty awesome. It allows White to look maybe potentially beatable for the first time. So this was a pretty fair to middling spend of my $5, I think. I could recommend it. But I was really impressed by Michael J. White, who has all the ingredients to be a big action star, I would imagine. I went ahead and actually on the same night followed this up by watching White in Black Dynamite, a legitimately very funny blaxploitation parody that he also co-wrote and produced. He plays a jive-talking badass that the bad guys fear and the ladies can't resist. It's hilarious, and perhaps a bit rich extending the joke for an hour and a half, but the film's consistently funny, and the ending's a riot. J. White is funny, charismatic, and surprisingly self-deprecating too, I think. So he's definitely worth watching out for.
So I guess on our DVD resurrection, Blood and Bones would be definitely the way to go over top of over top of Dragon Eyes.
Yeah, I would say, but I'd actually say Black Dynamite's a much better way to go.
Marvin, what do you make of all this?
Man, I don't even have an opinion.
Well, you gotta have an opinion. I mean, do you think that God came down from heaven and stopped it? Oh man, I shot Marvin in the face.
And now we're on to the top five. There are many action films. There are many bad action films. Bad because they are poorly made, have terrible acting or production values, but they do deliver action. There are, however, films that can be very good, or average, or entertaining and gripping, but they don't do what they said on the tin. So without prejudice, we deliver the top five action movies that don't deliver action.
For an example of something in a different genre, Pet Sematary to me is a slightly ham-fisted at times film, given to wooden performances and on-the-nose dialogue. Yet it's an effective fright film in my world. And whatever its other failings, it works as a horror film. On the other hand, sometimes we get an otherwise great film. It just fails to deliver on its genre expectations. It's still a good film, it just doesn't take care of its core business. And so we end up with something like 2005's Batman Begins.
Oh,
yes.
You feel the backlash begin.
Oh, bring it on.
Backlash begins.
Look, it's a refreshingly, I mean, we don't need to tell you this, a refreshingly well-told, find-the-actor superhero origin story that revitalized the character of Batman, but unfortunately completely dropped the ball when it came to delivering action scenes. Sure, the chase with the Batmobile is fun, but that's more because the Batmobile is just a cool piece of kit. It looks great. But can you remember a thrilling or imaginatively shot fight scene in the film? And I guess that's because Nolan wants to film Batman's attacks as sudden explosions of violence that come out of nowhere. But since all the action takes place in a world of murk and shadow, it makes for a pretty flat action film experience. Even the final confrontation is instantly forgettable. I also think that Nolan just doesn't have an eye for this sort of thing, or an interest in it, maybe, which is probably more the point. It really took until Inception for me to begin to think that he could handle an action sequence.
I completely understand what you're saying there. I think he steps it up in Dark Knight.
Yeah, I agree. I just think it's interesting he's carved a career as an action film director, largely, and really had to learn how to actually do action films along the way. Everything else has been great, obviously, and hard to fault, but his action credentials have been hard-earned.
First one I've gone for is a film I don't like, but it was a box office success, but it was derided. It's Lost in Space, 1998.
Oh, wow.
Directed by Stephen Hopkins. Large chunks of this film are eaten up by grandstanding speeches and plotting. The film lurches from scene to scene with little imagination and only a slimy Gary Oldman to breathe life into dialogue. Its action scenes are really what let it down. I could forgive all the bland characters. I mean, it's difficult to have action scenes when you have no enemy, so it's just them hurtling through space a lot of the time. And perhaps the worst part is a time travel driven last third. Time travel is a real bugbear of mine. I don't enjoy it as a plot device.
It is. You've said this before.
I have said it before. I know that you and I disagree on Harry Potter and the Prisoner of Azkaban,
right,
for this reason. But a lot of thing that made me not dislike the film but kind of switch off a little bit was the time travel device. To me, it's just a little bit easy, a little bit lazy, a little bit, oh, we'll go do this, and then we'll pretend that it never existed, that technology.
That's the worst part of it for me.
Yeah. It's like Superman spinning the world back at the end of Superman is probably the biggest kind of betrayal of an audience. Mm. You know, oh, he can do that? Why didn't he do that to begin with? but anyway, I'm digress. But not once in this film will you be gripped, and it basically has three minor action sequences in the whole film, and one for each act, and they amount to maybe, look, let's be generous and say 10 minutes each. And that leaves over 100 minutes of screen time to be left to the blandest characters and the most uninspired plot you're ever likely to encounter in a science fiction action film.
You know what really bugged me is that monkey, that like CGI space monkey?
Yeah.
I don't know if any of you remember those monkeys you used to get with the Velcro arms that you put around your neck and you'd use them as a puppet?
Yeah.
That would have been more impressive and actually more convincing on screen. All right, my second film is Underworld from 2003. And look, there's a surprising, I'm genuinely surprised, surprising amount of love out there for this fanged Romeo and Juliet monster mashup and its innumerable sequels. Love that I struggle to understand. Yes, Kate Beckinsale is fetching in skin-tight plastic or leather or whatever. Genuinely get that. And the idea of vampire stuck in a never-ending war with werewolves is admittedly tremendous. But Underworld never really delivers on the awesomeness of its premise. There aren't nearly enough in the way of vamp versus wolf shenanigans. When they do occur, they're shot on stage as flatly as possible, as if director Len Wiseman's whole ambition was to tease us with the coolest idea for battling monsters imaginable, and then reward us with the weakest action scenes he could film. It's bathed in the monotonous, cliched blue light that all these sort of action films have to have. And because of the slackness of the action in Underworld, I've never bothered to check out any of the sequels, so I can't really speak for whether Rise of the Lycans or anything. So I was genuinely surprised that Wiseman did a pretty fair job with Die Hard 4, I thought. Honestly, didn't think he had it in him.
Well, my second one is a film I really like a lot, and it's Kill Bill Volume 2, 2004, directed by Quentin Tarantino.
Wow.
Yeah, just as you've gone after Batman Begins and probably going to feel the punches and batarangs fly at your head, I've gone for Kill Bill Volume 2.
Surprises me.
Along with the first part, I've probably seen it three times. But as an action film, it's anemic, containing only one standout fight, that of Black Mamba and L Driver, played by Uma Thurman and Daryl Hannah, which is a punch-up in a caravan, let's be fair. It's a brawl.
Yeah.
The final act is particularly devoid of any action, instead detouring to find a dirty Michael Parks waxing lyrical about disfiguring prostitutes, and then a drawn-out ending where David Carradine rabbits on about Superman loathing humanity, finishing in a battle that lasts about 20 seconds.
Mm.
Compared with Kill Bill Volume 1's final act, which has more action than almost any other action franchise, again, to reiterate, I really like Kill Bill Volume 2, but not because it's an action film. To call Kill Bill 2 Volume 2 as an action film is completely justifiable considering what you've seen in Kill Bill Volume 1. Yet it has no action when you really look at it.
Well, it's interesting. I've never really stopped to think about it like that, but you did right, of course.
Mm.
Look, I loved Neil Marshall's debut film, Dog Soldiers, and like a lot of people, was even more impressed by this terrifyingly claustrophobic follow-up, The Descent. So you can only imagine how excited I was to see his next film, Doomsday, a love letter to the 80s genre cinema that promised to be one-third Dawn of the Dead, one-third Mad Max 2, and one-third Escape from New York. Sadly, it turned out to be three-thirds disappointing. as all it delivered was a pastiche of better films delivered without any of their energy and excitement. Well, except maybe for Escape from New York, which was pretty overrated Carpenter film. Anyway, but part of the problem with Doomsday is the casting of Rona Mitra, who is another in that terrible tradition of lead actresses in action films who can't plausibly pull off the action scenes. I'm obviously ignoring Kill Bill here, which is a really great action film starring an actress who can do the action scenes. I don't think this is me being sexist here. I've seen plenty of action films with tough, convincing actresses, but I've also seen Tomb Raider. So I know that just because someone looks great in skin-tight black pleather doesn't mean they should be tossing around 220-pound stuntman with one flick of their bony wrists. It looks ridiculous. I can only imagine the humiliation of being some chiseled, muscle-bound stunt veteran and having to sell being flattened by an awkward punch thrown by an off-balanced Drew Barrymore. It must be a hard thing to go home and say, how was your day? But Marshall's problems extend past an action heroine who doesn't look convincing. In the film's climactic road warrior-esque chase scene, the hero is pursued in the latest Bentley sports coupe by a ragtag collection of Mad Max-style cobbled-together jalopies. I'm no expert on cars, but I do know the latest Bentley is a pretty awesome machine and shouldn't be easily chased down by a beaten-up mid-80s Mazda hatch. And yet, that's exactly what happens. Worse, this whole chase scene appears to have been shot at speeds approaching 15 miles an hour, cunningly made to look like an imposing breakneck 18 through the use of fast edits and a shaky camera. It would hardly have looked less convincing if they'd filmed the getaway on inflatable moonhoppers. And that's really the shining message for me from our month of action, Duncan. And that's that you can't hide bad action. If I could give one piece of advice to filmmakers out there to print out and stick above their monitors as they type out their latest action script, it's that action happens in the frame. Simple as that. You can't disguise it with a fancy edit and jerky camera work. If you haven't filmed great action, you're not going to have a great action film.
Contemplate this on the Tree of Woe.
In honour of the classic John Milius film Conan the Barbarian, this is the part of the show where we take a moment to string up a cinematic offender from our movie month so that they may also suffer the pains of Conan and perhaps learn a valuable lesson as they contemplate this
on the Tree of Woe.
Bizarrely, horribly, and inexplicably, Videodrome remake rumours have begun circling again. This is perhaps the silliest of horror reboot ideas. Videodrome has practically zero audience recognition, and the audience that does know would hate whatever the hell Hollywood are going to do to a remake. It'll end up with some just disgustingly neutered PG-13 debacle with none of the fascinating ideas that Cronenberg's classic original explored. Frankly, they'd be better off building a franchise around a reboot of Crash.
I had an abortive attempt at watching an action film for the DVD Resurrection section. I actually had to watch two action films. Yes. And look, this is the reason why. Here I was thinking I had the perfect direct-to-DVD movie.
Mm.
Break, with a exclamation point. B-R-A-K-E. The cover had a tattooed Stephen Dorff holding a gun in a Jack Bauer pose with a helicopter hovering over the White House.
Sounds promising.
And a SWAT team swarming. The back cover had the hero kissing a pretty young thing in one panel, and the other, he's training a gun on an overweight Tom Berenger while a circle of agents point their weapons.
Berenger, Dorff, yep, sound good.
It looked like I was in for some good old-fashioned poor man's Born Identity. But instead, I was in for a homeless man's Buried, because for literally 95% of the film, Dorff is locked in the trunk of a car. Not an unappetizing prospect. The problem is that the camera, and therefore the audience, is also stuck in there with him. And that's too much concentrated Dorff for any human being to consume. But worse, it's advertised as an action film. It was in the action section.
It's a thriller? Yeah. Would you describe it? Yeah.
Yeah, it's a thriller. I haven't seen Buried, but it's basically Buried.
Right.
It's a guy in the trunk of a car.
Look, I would have thought after Buried, you can't do another Buried.
Yeah, he did a Buried.
Wow.
Did
you get through it all?
I watched the entire thing. Because I was like, okay, is the opening 20 minutes of this going to be? Is the opening act him and the thing, and he gets out, and then he gets, you know? No, the whole thing is him. Yeah.
Wow, that's terrible. That's rough.
Yeah. So then I had to watch Dragon Eyes after it.
Yeah. So, things got better?
Well, actually, in a weird kind of way, Break is probably a more successful film.
Right.
Because of what it's trying to do in that sub genre of guys buried.
Yeah, yeah, you know, it's sub-genre. Small subgenre.
Yeah, that's probably lived up to its...
That shelf space in the video store is quite limited, eh? Is it just the two movies?
That's excellent. There will be more, I have no doubt.
No doubt. Spoiler alert.
So that's the spoiler alert for this month. Look, we've got the Halloween night coming up on the 27th of October.
Yeah.
Saturday night starts at 6 p.m. That is at Sunset Studios, who also have upgraded their website, which is our website.
It looks amazing. I checked it out for the first time today. Looks great.
Yeah, it looks fantastic. Zane, good mate Zane and co-owner of Sunset, along with myself and Richard, did a fantastic job in upgrading that. So cheers, Zane. Also, join us on Facebook. Like us on Facebook, spoiler alert. And also, coming up on the blog, leading up to Skyfall, the new James Bond film. Look, I'm a bit of a James Bond tragic. I've read all the Ian Fleming books and watched all the films a few times. So I'll be doing a series of blogs leading up to Skyfall.
Oh, looking forward to that.
Which will hopefully improve on Quantum of Solace, which shouldn't be too difficult.
Yeah. During the month of October, we'll be doing a horror film a day, the 30 Days of Halloween. So if you're looking for something to watch, there'll be 30 things to watch.
So you'll be putting one up every day?
Every day.
On the blog.
Yeah, a new film. Try to introduce some things you might not have seen, you might not have considered. Some of them will be available at your video store, some will be a bit harder to find, or worth finding.
The blog is Listen to Spoiler Alert. That's on the Tumblr site. That's all one word, Listen to Spoiler Alert. There is a link to it in the info section of the Facebook page for Spoiler Alert. The music we're going out to is from Expendables the musical.
Yes.
Found it on YouTube, didn't we? So it's the Expendables sung from the point of view of Sylvester Stallone as his character.
Yeah, basically the plot of the Expendables. So enjoy it.
Cheers, and we'll see you next month.
If you're looking to get the job done, be it murder or rescue ladies, you could not do better than old guys who were popular back in the 80s. Yes, old or prematurely bald, the fearless fighting force that's called the Expendables.
The Expendables.
The Expendables.
The Expendables.
The Expendables.
Our careers were basically over, every one of us starring in shit. Then one man came along with a vision, and voila, just like that, it's a hit. So no more straight to DVD, 'cause I got you and you got me.
The Expendables.
The Expendables.
The Expendables.
The Expendables.
The Expendables.
The Expendables.
I totally possessed my dad.